Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, shame-based liberals who think that civil rights is treating your nanny properly. Good morning to you, Mark Riley. We're here. How are you, buddy?
Good morning, man. How you doing, man?
I'm rambling already. We're here at Florent, down here in the Meatpacking District in New York City. Come on down. There's a powerful audience of seven here right now. Some people don't even want to be part of it. They just came in for bacon and eggs after a long night of drinking around the corner.
Hey.
And they're like, what is happening? Why are we here? Why are those two guys shouting at us in the corner?
This is a treasured New York City tradition.
Yes, it is. I want to announce here at Florent, we're helping Florent celebrate 20 years in the Meatpacking District. The celebration kicks off in earnest next week with various festivities, culminating in a benefit gala at the Roxy Nightclub next Saturday, October 22nd. So that'll be good. I'm going to have some of that coffee in just a few minutes, Riley. I'm going to hold off on it.
It's wonderful.
Look, you know, I was talking yesterday, Riley, about Democrats getting involved because Democrats are waking up to the possibility that they might have a chance in the midterm election. And, you know, given a couple weeks from now, they might just be able to run on the platform of, hey, we're not them. I mean, look at these guys. They're coming apart. They're, I think Bush is all alone. He's got nobody to talk to. Karl Rove is, you know, is worrying about his own problems. This Jack Abramoff investigation, the lobbyists, they don't even know how far that's going to spread. Everyone in Washington who's part of the GOP is probably implicated in that. And it seems like Bush is just sitting alone in the White House wondering how to, you know, what to do and how to lead, because he never had a clue otherwise, and he certainly doesn't know how to do with it without his people around.
Well, two words, cronyism and corruption. That's what we've got.
Yeah.
And the Republicans don't know what to do. They're panicked. Their leadership in the Congress is paralyzed. Bush's number one guy, Karl Rove, paralyzed. Dick Cheney's number one guy, Scooter Libby, paralyzed. Harriet Beyer's nomination, paralyzed. Everything is frozen because nobody knows what to do. Now, what the Democrats have as a challenge is to show people what they can do, as opposed to just sitting up and saying, hey, look at them. You got to go after them when they're down. That's what the Republicans are very, very good at.
I just picture George Bush in the Oval Office crying, Mommy, could somebody please help me? There is a way, you know, someone, a listener emailed me yesterday, and if you want information on how to present yourself or put together a campaign, if you're a couch pundit with a little bit of charisma and wants to get involved in a congressional race, or you're just a know-it-all who's just tired of talking to your friends about how right you are and want to get into the race, you can go to www.wellstoneaction.org and get all the information you need to put together a candidacy, to figure out how to talk to people, to figure out how to put together an operation that will enable you to run for office. So wellstoneaction.org is where you need to go. And there's a lot of things that we could run on. I mean, I'd like to see some Democrats get out there on the platform of, you know, bringing the troops home from Iraq. Or how about pointing out that the Department of Homeland Security, the CIA, the FBI have all been turned out for political purposes and now don't even function as security operations. They could run on addressing the realities of poverty and how to change the economy. There's a million things that Democrats can run on. Unfortunately, a lot of the Democratic leaders are not quite speaking up or showing their, you know, their values. But if you're angry and young and charismatic, or even if you're, it doesn't matter what age you are, but it's time to get involved and run for Congress.
Hey, if you're well organized, think about running. And it doesn't always have to be for Congress or the Senate or whatever. One of the things that the religious right did very, very well was start running people for local school boards. One board at a time. That's why intelligent design is now in the courts. Because 10, 15 years ago, these people decided, you know what, we're going to start taking over these systems, these different public policy shapers, and bend them to our will. And what we have to do as progressive people is understand that every political office is important. Whether it's our planning board or Congress or the Senate or the presidency of the United States.
Folks, you got to come down to Florent right now. There's no line to get in. Come on down. We're in the meatpacking district. There's a couple people here that are looking at us like they've just been forced into class. what is this? But it's a powerful eight people that are here, and I'm going to quit saying that because the illusion of radio will enable us to fool people.
Hey, people coming in one at a time. Look at them. Get it.
What just happened there?
Whoa.
That was a little feedback. Yeah, see, it's starting out to be a good morning. So look, mayoral candidate Fernando Ferrer will be out here in just a few minutes to talk about his new plan to take on Mayor Mike Bloomberg. So stick around for that. It's 11 past the hour. This is Morning's Edition. We're at Courant in the New York's Meatpacking District.
Yeah.
Morning's Edition on the air. And online. Morning'sEdition.com. Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Citizen program, broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent in New York's Meatpacking District. Come on down. We got free coffee. We got a bunch of guests. Lawton Smalls is going to be here in a little while. Got Riley here, our guest, our first guest, is the Democratic candidate for mayor in New York City. He's joining us live for the second time at Restaurant Florent. Please welcome back to Morning Citizen, Fernando Ferrer. Good morning.
Yeah. Good morning.
So, Mr. Ferrer, what's the plan? How are we gonna take down Mike Bloomberg now? How can you compete with a guy that's putting $47 million into his campaign?
Gonna do it the old-fashioned way.
Okay.
Gonna wear out shoe leather.
Okay, good.
Subway stations, shopping centers, senior citizen centers. I'm gonna go to where the people are. This is a guy who wants to. Anybody remember the Wizard of Oz?
Mm-hmm.
His big booming voice
mm-hmm. Behind
the curtain, pulling all the levers. That's Mike.
Was one of those levers, did one of those levers that he pulled maybe be an intentional terror alert for political reasons?
Well, you know, I don't want to think that because only a short distance away from here, we still have a huge gaping hole
mm-hmm. Where
the World Trade Center used to be. I don't want to think that at all because that sort of redefined for an awful lot of New Yorkers what winning and losing was all about when we lost 3,000 New Yorkers in that terror attack. But I think now that the alert is down, it's appropriate for the mayor and the police commissioner to explain exactly what went into their reasoning to call the alert, what steps they took, what they knew and when they knew it. That's appropriate, and in fact, that's what they owe New Yorkers.
You know, it's interesting. We now have a situation where it's been confirmed that some rich and powerful New Yorkers knew about this terror alert before the rest of the city apparently learned about this terror alert. What would you, as Mayor Ferrer, do about that now that it's been confirmed?
Well, first of all, you can't take any threat against New Yorkers lightly, especially in our mass transit system. And what I would have done was paid attention to some recommendations that were made by me in July. First of all, we have a mass transit system that is under threat, and it didn't happen a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago. We've known this since 9/11. Put forward a series of recommendations that would have not only secured the Homeland Security money that we need for our system, the mayor hasn't done, but second, and most importantly, spend the money that was already allocated to give us the kind of effective and ongoing deterrent in our subway system that we deserve. We made those recommendations in July. Mayor still has ignored them. And that's the thing that will keep our subway and mass transit system safe and keep people who use it, the millions every day who use it, confident in it.
It's interesting to me that what Riley was talking about, that there were these emails that went out to certain rich and powerful people in New York, but they went out before Mike Bloomberg was even briefed on this, so he's got to get on different email lists.
As I understand, about 3 days before, it looks like somebody at Homeland Security is going to lose their job.
Not in this administration.
but it is amazing and pretty troubling that some people get some emails about this.
So now Bloomberg's promised about that he's going to bring about, like, what is he promised about, 150,000 new jobs in lower Manhattan. Is that possible? What is your feelings about that?
Well, he sure hasn't done it in the last 4 years. Thank God for elections, because it sort of brings out the best in people who have been silent and helping guys like George Bush and Tom DeLay. That's right. I mean, you know, this is a guy, by the way, a different kind of Republican. I guess so. $250,000 to the twice indicted Tom DeLay's political action committees. That's a real different kind of Republican. Nobody writes a check like Mike Bloomberg.
Mr. Ferrer, there have been two polls this week, one the Q poll, the other the Marist poll, that have you down by 27 and 28 points respectively. How badly do polls like this damage your campaign, and how do you refute them?
You mean these same two polls that said only 2 days before the Democratic primary that I wasn't going to win it and that were 11 points wrong? You mean those two polls?
Yeah, them.
Oh, okay. Well, here I am, the Democratic nominee. And I'll tell you something else about the polls. You know, Mike, it doesn't surprise me. Mike Bloomberg has spent nearly $50 million that he's reported and all those other strategic charitable contributions. It's amazing what you see on television. I mean, you've got to tune into the Food Network to avoid his commercials. And if this guy started making bread, he'd be on that too. I am telling you, it's an amazing number of commercials. It's all this happy talk about jobs, about housing, when in fact he's produced only a third of what he promised. And in jobs, we've lost more jobs than we've gained. Mike Bloomberg won't tell you that. And he pats his back about the rise in fourth grade test scores, but he forgets to tell you about the 50% dropout rate on his watch. Well, I'm going to keep this guy honest. For the next 4 weeks, we're going to be in the streets. We're going to be talking to people, part of a movement in this city to return democratic values to City Hall.
All right. We're talking to Fernando Ferrer, Democratic candidate for New York City mayor. Well, Mr. Ferrer, let's talk a little bit about those democratic values, because you're certainly not hearing a lot of talk from Democrats in Washington about, you know, what they stand for. They seem to be sort of saying, like, at least we're not them and let's watch them eat themselves. So, you know, what are some of those values you think that are important to the Democratic Party at this point in time?
Well, there's one principle that's always guided my life as a Democrat, and that is that everybody in this city, everybody in this country, if you work hard and do right, deserves the tools they need to be able to build a good life here. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the principle that's underlied whatever I've done in public service. That affects my view of the world.
Is there any chance I'll be able to move back into the city at any point in time?
Well, all you got to do is walk across the street and see the problem with Mike Bloomberg. He has trouble telling multi-million dollar condos from affordable housing. Now, to him, that's affordable. But to the rest of the world, it's not.
Now, Mr. Ferrer, how do you deal with the perception, even among some of your supporters, that Mike Bloomberg cannot lose this election? I mean, is this created mostly by media? How do you refute it?
Well, a Mike Bloomberg that did not want to face his opponents in the Apollo Theater for the first campaign finance board debate. You know, this is a guy who, by the way, you're the mayor, you take an oath of office. Protect and support the laws. That's one of them. Now, it's nice to be a multi-billionaire because you don't have to play by those rules. Okay. But at least show your respect and reverence for the law. Campaign finance board whose members you appoint by showing up at that debate. Now, it was an insult. Now, some people say it was an insult to Harlem, insult to the Apollo Theater. Yeah, that's true. Because he didn't answer the tough questions in a place that was bound to ask him questions about chronic unemployment, homelessness, poverty in the city. The man could only manage to utter the word poverty once in the last 4 years. But the bigger issue is, it's a back of the hand to the rest of New York. This is a guy who's going to wait for a few days before the primary, in the court of public opinion, go judge shopping, pick his debates where he'll look the best, closest to the election, will avoid public scrutiny, will avoid the tough questions, will avoid debates in every one of the boroughs as I've challenged him to do, as he, by the way, once supported in 2001 when he was an underdog for mayor. And can you imagine Mike Bloomberg, multi-billionaire, being an underdog in anything?
Now, I've got some concern that there's a lot of wealthy Democrats who are hiding the fact that they vote Republican. I'm starting to believe that. And, what do you think that, how come you're not getting as much money this time around from wealthy Democrats in the city, do you think?
Well, some of them who are, you know, there was one quote in the Observer last week that was one of the most breathtakingly arrogant quotes I had ever seen.
From the Observer. Who knew?
In the Observer, quoted a high-profile national Democrat, who, by the way, has never gotten involved in local affairs anyway, mm-hmm. now saying, you know, I don't know anybody in my world who's supporting him. Well, what world is that? And then goes on to say, we are the party. Now, folks, I don't know. Maybe I'm confused about this. Help me out here. I thought we were the party.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you're talking about going out, certainly with a lot of national figures, John Kerry, John Edwards, people like that. What local people will you have, and which local people will be closest to you in this last month before the election?
Already been campaigning with Chuck Schumer, next week with Hillary Clinton. There are members of the Congress like Charlie Rangel and Gregory Meeks, who I'll be with tonight campaigning in his district. Members of Congress, state senators, was on the West Side with Tom Duane and Chris Quinn, Deborah Glick. Look, what we are doing is taking our message to every corner of this city. Leave none behind. At 72nd Street and Broadway the other morning with Ruth Messenger and Councilmember Gail Brewer. Ruth and I served together, as you remember, Mark Riley and the City Council, and then together as borough presidents.
Fernando Ferrer, thank you so much for being with us, Democratic candidate for New York City.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good luck. We're with you here. We'll be back in just a second. We've got we've got a lot to talk about Tom DeLay. We've got a lot to talk about the Bush administration falling apart completely. We've got Mark the Shark coming up in a few minutes. And my friend Russ Meneve is going to be here. He's a comedian. Tom Beller, the writer, is going to be here. We've got free coffee, folks. Please, free coffee here for Ron. Come on down. Some of the regulars are here. Mr. Booing Guy is here. It's always nice to see you. How are you, buddy? Look, he's just so angry at anybody in power. All right. I'm not going to focus on him right now. So Mark the Shark is coming up, as I said, and the iNews 5000. So stay with us. We're live at the Restaurant Florent on Gansford Street in the Meatpacking District. Talk to you in a second.
Morning Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
All right, it's 34 past the hour. Good morning. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent in New York's Meatpacking District. All right, we're giving away coffee. We're giving away prizes. The audience is starting to materialize. Once again, we have the suspicious-looking loner sitting up front. You're not going to shoot me, are you? All right, he's not. Good. All right. I always got to check with the guy sitting alone up front that now our IT guy says he will shoot me. That's great.
There you go.
That's great. That's comforting. Hey, we're going to do Mark the Shark in just a few minutes. We're going to talk about Tom DeLay in just a few minutes. I'm going to have some of that coffee, I think. I need it, Riley.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Here we go. Sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. Luckily, we have this iNews 5000 Wi-Fi headline translator. Let's crank it up and feed it some headlines. Dan? All right, he did it. Good.
Wow. Not bad.
Brendan McDonald, of course, on his honeymoon and in his place. Dan Pashman doing it live. I think it was good this time.
Thanks, man. I was practicing at home in the shower.
What? I believe you. All right. From Reuters, Bush approval dips to 39%. Bush approval dips to 39%. Translation, new terror alert imminent. From ABC News, Big Easy cops deny using excessive force. Big Easy cops deny using excessive force. Translation, cops to media. Move along. Nothing to see here. Okay, here we go. From ABC News. Oh, why did you put the machine on? Hey, wait a minute. It's jumping the gun there. From ABC News, Apple introduces video iPod. Apple introduces video iPod. Translation, Steve Jobs invents pocket porn. Let's get that outro going there, Dan.
Yeah.
All right, good, good, good. That's it. slight dip in confidence on the tail end, but I think it was good. It was a noble effort.
It's all right.
I thought it was great, Dan.
I think Brandon might have to worry when he gets back.
I don't know about that.
I'm not sure. So let's talk about this, Riley. I want to quote George Bush from last week in an attempt to pander to black Americans on October 4th. Bush said, quote,
"Black American, what does that mean? I don't know what that means."
Okay.
Black American.
Yeah. Okay. Get to a meeting. All right. Here's what he said. He said, "It matters what leaders say. It matters that somebody, first of all, understands there's a problem and is willing to talk about it, and I will continue to do so as president." End quote. If this is his attempt at bridging the racial divide, he might as well have been saying it from a bridge looking over New Orleans, because his approval rating among African Americans is at 2%, Riley.
2%.
Probably the lowest in the history of polling, if not the presidency.
Yeah. I mean, and he's got T.D. Jakes and all of these black preachers supposedly on his side, and his approval rating is at 2%. The bottom fell out as that hurricane hit New Orleans. That kind of tore it with George W. Bush and black folks in this country. And Kanye West has turned out to be absolutely prophetic in his statement that George W. Bush doesn't care about black people. Now, black people obviously don't care anything about George W. Bush.
The White House is refusing to speculate on the outcome of the Iraqi vote on the approval of a draft constitution and national referendum this Saturday. I guess maybe they've learned that whatever they think or say has little bearing on the realities on the ground in Iraq, but I doubt that. They're watching their own asses as usual. And the fact of the matter is that he really can't say anything with any confidence at all anymore, given that the fact that the inner sanctum, that the entire administration is falling apart each day. Bill Frist under investigation from the SEC. Tom DeLay going down. Two indictments. Can't wait. Karl Rove will be led out of the White House in cuffs in a couple of weeks. Hopefully. All right? Scooter Libby.
And so much of this has to do with Iraq. Remember that the entire Plaingate situation began as an effort to discredit somebody who didn't follow their line on ramping up to go to war. That's what this whole thing is about. And you see how arrogant, how absolutely drunk with power these people are, that they're still trying to deny that they did anything wrong, whether it's DeLay, whether it's Frist. Rove apparently isn't talking to anybody. I don't even know. Does he have a wife?
Yes, he does, actually.
He does have. Carl Rove is married?
Jeff Gannon.
Oh, okay. I don't know if they're talking at this point.
They might be the only guys talking right now to each other. You know, I can't stand when Republicans or conservatives say that we talk a lot, that we're reactionary, but we don't have a plan. We do have a plan. Get rid of Bush. That is the plan. How can that not be clear? What is it? I mean, get rid of Bush. Get rid of as many Republicans as possible. Get rid of politicians who base their campaigns on denying people their civil rights or merging of church and state. Get rid of cronyism. There's a way to do this, and we got to start by clearing them out.
Well, and step one is not allowing them to separate the amount of money that we're spending on Iraq from everything else that we're spending. They have tried to build a firewall between the economic stagnation that we're now all experiencing, the rising gas prices, the whole nine, and the, what, $300 billion we've spent in Iraq thus far? $300 billion. And they're still trying to make it sound as though that expenditure is something we absolutely must do. And I'm not sure.
And hundreds of millions of dollars are just missing. How can that? Bricks of money are missing.
Well, they just indicted, they put out arrest warrants inside Iraq for people from the U.S.-backed government who allegedly ripped off a flat $1 billion in Iraq. That's the money that has disappeared, and nobody seems to have any idea where it is. An arrest warrant has gone out for the former defense minister under Ayad Alawi.
That's interesting that they're experiencing, as on a governmental level, similar problems to us right now.
Yeah.
Tom DeLay. Let's talk about Tom DeLay, because there's more trouble with him right now. In the indictment, there he's been forced to turn over home and campaign phone records from the period he's charged with conspiracy to launder illegal campaign donations. So this is getting thick. And the only thing that he can think to do in this moment is to hire a publicity company to start slandering Ron Johnny Earl. It's hilarious because no matter what slander this guy goes through at this point in time, if the charges stick, they stick. And it seems that Ronnie Earl is amassing proof. There's more indications that hundreds of thousands of dollars were misfunneled into campaigns that was not allowed to be funneled into campaigns through Tom DeLay's Political Action Committee. And the fact that they're subpoenaing, you know, telephone numbers, they're even looking into a car purchase. So this, they're getting into the nuances. This guy is going to be also led out of the Capitol in cuffs as well. I cannot wait for the cops episode. I'm telling you, I hope that somebody is working on it. I hope that our comedy writers are working on it. There's got to be an episode of Cops shot at the White House.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. This is why you don't mess with prosecutors. Now, earlier this week on Tuesday, DeLay, and through his lawyer, Dick DeGaren, tried to subpoena Ronnie Earl to talk about what are normally secret grand jury proceedings. Don't think for a moment that Ronnie Earl didn't figure, wait a minute, okay, you want to play? All right, fine. Let me see all your phone records. Ronnie Earl seems to be ready to play this game of chicken with Tom DeLay, and my guess is DeLay plays chicken.
Well, here, you know what's amazing about what's going on is that the one thing you're not hearing a lot about in the mainstream press, and the one thing that is really of ultimate importance in the unraveling of the GOP at this point in time, is this federal investigation into Jack Abramoff, the power lobbyist who was allied with Tom DeLay and apparently might have been aligned with just about every Republican operative in Washington. The one thing that's scaring them the most underneath the Karl Rove and the Plaingate investigation is this investigation into Jack Abramoff, because given that he was the guy that moved money around, that funneled money for politicians, everybody can be implicated. You know, already there are White House staff members. What's that guy's name? David Safavian, a former Rove business partner, and he's also serving as White House procurement official, was arrested. And that's just the beginning. So underneath all the Rove scandal and all the Scooter Libby scandal and Dick Cheney and everybody else who might have been involved in Plaingate, they are slowly sort of widening the investigation into Jack Abramoff, and that could implicate half of the Congress.
What is a procurement official anyway?
You're asking me?
I want to know. Because, you know, we're paying for it. We ought to know what he's doing.
I guess he's the guy that says, yeah, give me that money. Yeah, okay.
Because, I mean, you know, under normal circumstances, a procurement official could be kind of paraphrased as a pimp.
Okay, well, then let's call him that. I misphrased it. David Safavian, White House pimp.
If you're a procurement official, what are you procuring?
You know, they play these games with language because they want people to think it's official.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, one of the things that has people in Washington nervous about this entire thing is that it lifts up a rock on the mold that's underneath about how lobbying is done, how deals are done, how people end up playing both ends against the middle. So Jack Abramoff allegedly took money from casinos, Indian casinos on the one hand, and took money from people trying to block those same casinos on the other hand. It was an amazing scam that this guy had going on. And the problem is he got sloppy, he got greedy, he got drunk with power, just like Bush, just like Cheney, just like Libby, just like Rove. All of these people are overreaching because they think the American people aren't paying attention. Well, folks, people are starting to pay attention. And if Marin's right, some of these folks are going to be led down a perp walk, the likes of which they have never experienced before in their lives.
And just for a little cherry on top, you know, Ralph Reed, the guy who used to be involved with the moral majority, he's under investigation as well for stealing Indian money. And I think that that's one of those things that whatever happens, no matter how powerless he may be at this time, he's running for, what is he running for?
Lieutenant governor.
He's just one of those guys you want to see hurt. You know, he's just one of those guys you just want to see arrested because you just hate him because he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Is that just me? Am I wrong in my liberal schadenfreude? All right. It is it's 45 past the hour just about here. We're going to come back with Mark the Shark.
Yeah.
So stay with us. It's Air America Radio's Morning Tradition live from Florence. 45 past.
Morning Sedition, Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Don't just stare at it, eat it.
On Air America Radio.
Citizen program broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent in New York's Meatpacking District. Come on, we're giving away free coffee, folks. Come on down. We got an audience growing, a powerful audience at this point in time. They put something weird in the coffee, or what is that, cinnamon or chicory or something?
I think it's cinnamon and chicory.
It's excellent. Yeah, it later in the show, we've got comedian Russ Meneve, author Thomas Beller. We got Lawton Smalls. We got a lot of stuff going on.
Bruce Cherry's pitch of the week also coming up soon.
Of course, everybody loves to hate Bruce Cherry. I'm kidding.
But hey, Mark, we actually have a guy here who wants to make a comment. I'm going to go ahead and let him talk here.
All right. What do you got, buddy?
Yeah, this is Ted from Nebraska, and I think it's despicable the way the Democrats seem to think they can just run down members of the administration. I really think it's irresponsible.
Oh, no, it's happening. Oh, no, I hate when... help me, Riley. Oh, my God. Oh, no, it's happening. My thoughts are starting to change. I'm becoming him. Oh, no.
Hell, Pennsylvania. Live from Radio Halliburton, it's Right and Early, the conservatives' way to wake up with Mark the Shark Maron.
Good morning, neo-gum. Hey, Mark the Shark is live here at Florent, a French restaurant in the meatpacking district. I think I'll skip the sausage, if you know what I mean, huh, Gerard? Get it? Meatpacking sausages. Get it? Hey, step on up to the Shark Tank and ask Mark the Shark a question.
Yeah, Mark the Shark. Do you think Carl Rove's in serious legal trouble?
No.
Tom DeLay?
No.
Scooter Libby?
No. No. And the answer to your next 10 questions is no, 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 idiot. You liberals got nothing, and you'll never get us. Never. And if you do, which you won't, we'll run the country from prison. All right? As long as we have cell phones and cigarettes, Karl Rove can run this place from the moon if he wants. Next.
Yeah, Mark the Shark. What about Ronnie Earle? It seems like he's a real case against Tom DeLay.
Oh, I'm Ronnie Earle. I'm a partisan hack and an abomination of justice. Tom DeLay is guilty of laundering money, just like I'm guilty of laundering my pretty pink panties. Oh, look at my thong, Mr. Clinton.
Hey, let me tell you something. Ronnie Earle will convict Tom DeLay the same day Hillary Clinton votes to outlaw wet lesbian sex with Rosie O'Donnell. Who's next here?
Mark the Shark. I'm the guy who sent you the Nancy Pelosi urinal cake.
Oh,
I made it myself, dude.
Hey, you know what? Thanks, man. I used them at the office, Patriot. I always aim for a big, dumb forehead. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, what's your question, buddy?
Do you think all these investigations against the Bush administration are like some kind of liberal plot, man?
Hey, buddy, don't worry, Patriot. The plot is all ours. Here's the game plan. We trick the liberals into blitzing. We throw the screen pass. And 6 months from now, we're running into the end zone saying, goodbye, Roe v. Wade. You know what I'm saying, buddy?
So everything that's happening now is like part of a plan?
That's affirmative, Patriot. You think George W. Bush doesn't know exactly what he's doing? Come on. It's genius. First Katrina, then Rita, now Myers. This is the most complicated game in history, and he's winning, my friend, big time, even though it looks like exactly the opposite. But that's the plan. USA, USA, USA. That's right, liberals. Better enjoy your kiddie porn and abortions on demand now, because it's all going to come crashing down on you like a four-story building on a falafel cart in Pakistan.
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
Yeah, stick around, neocons. We'll be back with Toby Keith.
Don't touch that dial, Patriot. We'll be back with Right and Early.
You all right, man?
I don't know what's something wrong with the coffee. I think I blacked out again.
Uh-oh.
I hate when that happens every Friday at this time.
You're all right.
You know, I hate to humanize anybody that I have contempt for, but it always happens with me. Get this. Porter Goss, the CIA director, apparently is also a gentleman farmer. Did you know that?
Yeah, I read about this. I'm not sure I'm buying it.
Porter Goss is apparently leading a double life. One as a spy. The other is this post-hippie sustainable agricultural farmer. He raises turkeys, cattle, chicken, and sheep on this 575-acre Virginia farm. It's like no pesticides, no chemical additives.
All organic.
Yeah, well, I mean, the weird thing is, this is a guy that will oversee the renditioning and torture of human beings, but, you know, he'll sort of pet and sweet talk a chicken as he kills it softly.
Well, you know, I mean, does he play the band and Bob Dylan and stuff?
I don't know if it's that much. But, you know, you know this happens. I mean, we got to remember, you know, Hitler was a vegetarian.
Oh, Lord.
And, but I'll tell you, I don't think Eva Braun sold jelly outside the bunker, because Goss and his wife have this general store where she sells her jams, and he takes orders for organic Thanksgiving turkeys. I'd like to see the response for that. You know, that's all right. I know where you live. I know how many people are coming. I know what websites you visit. Be careful.
Yeah.
I got my eye on you. I got my eye on you. Happy holidays.
Would you buy a turkey from Porter Goss?
No.
I wouldn't buy a turkey. Organic.
I haven't eaten turkey. I haven't eaten meat in like months. I can't believe it, because it's like, it's weird now, because it's actually been, what? How long's it been?
It's been a while, because, you know, when you first got here, you were eating everything. Sheep, mutton, beef.
I was a proud eater of meat.
Yeah.
Until I realized.
And suddenly, Kalo, I don't know what he did. But he got you off the swine.
Well, you always say swine like I'm a Muslim now.
There you go.
Or just, you know, reengaging my Jewishness. But it's got nothing to do with that. What it has to do with is a fear of mad cow disease, my friends. But I'll tell you one thing, though. I just, every time I come to this place or we go to another place and I just smell that bacon, I feel like I'm a heroin addict. Like, you know, my skin starts itching and I'm like, wow, maybe I could just a little bacon. That wouldn't hurt. What, just a taste,
yeah, just
man.
Just a little taste.
Guys, just get a little taste of bacon. You know, just give me some of the drippings from the pan. It's pathetic.
You'd go right back to eating pork. You know,
think so?
Pork
was my favorite, man. So let's, you want to talk about this Chastity Club? Or we don't have much
chastity
time.
Chastity Club. It doesn't take much time to talk about that.
No, I want to get into it in depth. I do want to say this. Walmart, the store that is wrong for so many reasons, one of which is false piousness in terms of its yanking adult mags off the shelf and not stocking certain films or CDs, is now responsible for the through-the-roof sales of KY Jelly, my friends. Yes, that old standby sex lube. apparently, some of it has to do with the slick new marketing campaign, pushing it off as massage gel. But KY Touch massage oils are just flying off the shelves at Walmart. And I think it's really the difference between, it's on the packaging when it comes to feeling comfortable in the checkout line. It's the difference between saying, I got a bad shoulder, and sometimes we do it the other way. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's really a matter of what the cashier thinks of you at that moment.
Hey, man, the cashiers, especially in New York, they judge you about everything you buy.
Dude, you know, I get cold sores on my lip, and my doctor prescribed me Famvir, which is specifically for genital herpes. So now all I do is sit there, and, like, every time I walk into the pharmacist, I'm like,
Hi, Purple, how you doing?
I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, sick is sick, but, you know, there's certain sicks where they
scratch
look at you
kind
of funny. Yeah, yeah. Well, look, we'll be back. Well, we're not going anywhere. We're going to be here at Florent all morning. It's in New York's meatpacking district.
Yeah.
Bruce Carey's Pitch of the Week coming up. Tom Beller's coming up. It's 57 past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. It's 6 past the hour, folks. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're broadcasting live from Restaurant Florence on Gansevoort Street in New York's Meatpacking District. We've got free coffee, prizes. We got some comedies coming up. Lawton Smalls is here. Mark Riley's right there.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, the audience is starting to broaden out a bit. I had a little discussion with the suspicious-looking loner up front. Turns out he knows me, and that's one of those weird things where you're like, that guy's he's come to hurt me. And then he's like, no, I met you a few years ago. I heard you on the radio. I just thought I'd help out because you only said you had a few people here. I'm like, I'm an ass.
Hey, wait a minute. Haven't you been one of those suspicious-looking loners at some time in your life?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Just want to make sure.
I used to think that was what I used to call courting. You know, when I had a certain fascination or what I thought was love for a woman, which turned out to be just obsession, I would do exactly what he was doing. I would sit there and just look longingly at the person until they got uncomfortable.
Were they on a stage?
No. Usually they were just in a cafeteria eating or studying or reading a book, and I was the weird insecure guy looking needy across the way. Demanding.
But did it work? That's the bottom line.
If it did work, it was really a charity situation. But I've killed that part of myself. I no longer do that. As I was, as we were talking to Greg Barron about last week, when he was talking about courting, the difference between courting and stalking, and when I started to fall in love with my now wife, the wife I have now, there was no real courting. It was grilling. It really was. It was just sort of like, do you love me? Why? Why? Tell me. You know, and it worked out good, and I still do that. I wish I was kidding. So I really do. I want to, all right, too much information about Mark. I do want to reach out to Democrats and people, progressives, liberals, any of you people. Look, you see what's going on in the GOP. You see that everything they stand for is breaking apart. Now, I think the Democrats are starting to wake up to the possibility that that we might have a chance in the midterm election, a good chance. We need 15 seats in the House. We need 6 in the Senate. This is possible. I'm reaching out to couch pundits. I'm reaching out to know-it-alls. I'm reaching out to those annoying people that are just sort of like, yeah, we're screwed, man. Nothing's ever going to change. It doesn't matter who's in charge. I can't believe that. And I want you people out there who think you have some charisma, some juice, some vision, some commitment, some passion, get out there and run for Congress. I know this is a weird thing, but I think we're going to actually sponsor a congressional candidate, if possible, like a child, like please, like a lost child. But do go to www.wellstoneaction.org to get some information about how this can be done. Apparently, they give classes. They give you information on how to put together a package for candidacy. And I think it's a great thing because it's one of those things, if you're like me, as soon as I think about doing something, I picture myself doing it, and then I picture how much it's going to take to do it. I get exhausted, and I sleep. That's the way my brain works. So if you're one of those people that just thinks it's too much to bear, that it's not doable, you will see, if you go to wellstoneaction.org, that it's completely possible, and I'm encouraging you. I would do it myself, but I'm too dirty. I got too many skeletons in the closet. One of our writers, Bruce Cherry, has been trying to get a regular character on the show. We're going to do the Dog of the Week in a minute, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. He's been trying to get a regular character on the show. We haven't given him a chance. We haven't given his ideas a chance. Despite what Bruce thinks is an enthusiastic reception from listeners, he's usually... Oh, my God.
Okay. No.
We don't know if his ego has recovered from the rejection that last week's audience gave him, but clearly we're in the middle of something that I don't want to call desperate. I want to...
No. Old English 800...
It's called professionalism, Mark.
Okay,
it's called professionalism.
Bruce Cherry, I'll tell you what he's wearing in a minute. So, Bruce, what is the pitch of the week? I'm assuming it has something to do with the theme you're capturing in your outfit.
Okay, Mark, as you know, I'm the most reflective of the writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My thoughtfulness is what distinguishes me. Okay. And I tend to analyze subjects. What are you laughing?
Okay. I don't want to tip the joke to the people who are listening, but, you know, you're dressed up for this.
Yeah.
Okay, let me explain,
okay?
Oh, God.
The reason for this is that I watched the movie March of the Penguins.
Okay.
And they said that Christian conservatives were, like, turning on to that movie because they thought that penguins proved intelligent design because they could live in the harsh environs of the Antarctic.
Uh-huh.
And this is where my deep thinking comes in. Okay. I realized, you know what? It actually proves the opposite. If there was intelligent design, the entire planet would be 68 and sunny. Am I right?
Yes, I think you are right. Yeah.
Okay. And then most people would stop there. That's when I start to, like, spin the theological webs.
Right.
Okay. Standard theology assumes God is perfect. And then they try to figure out why so much suffering in the world.
Mm-hmm.
What if God is a well-intentioned dim bulb?
Okay. Yeah.
When you think about it.
Yeah.
The Greek gods make more sense in terms of how the world is done.
Yeah, I like it. There's one for everything.
And so here's my pitch. Here's my character. Every week, we have a visit from Bacchus, god of wine. And that is who I am portraying.
So the Bacchus, wine. God of wine, it's a weekly thing.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Except, you know, I've updated the character to reflect modern alcoholism.
So do you, are we doing that, it?
That's your topicality. And,
okay.
In terms of the funny, I'm wearing a sheet.
Yes.
So we're halfway there.
And you have, what is it, laurels in your hair?
It's actually a centerpiece from a wedding, but it'll function as a headpiece, yeah.
I just want to make sure that people understand who are listening in their cars or at home that Bruce is actually wearing this. This is not radio. Bruce has gone all out this time.
Well, we have like 400 to 500 people in the audience.
Yes, always. Yeah. When we go live in New York, half the city comes out. All right, so do
oddly
we have
enough, only 50 of them are yelling. So I know.
The others are shy.
Let's go to script, Mark.
Yes, let's do. Okay, here we go. Next up, we have a very special guest. He's the god of wine and revelry. Please welcome Bacchus. Hey, Bacchus.
Hey, yes.
Oh. Hey, Bacchus, you don't look so good.
Oh, rough night last night. I don't remember a thing.
Yeah?
I think I slept with a satyr. I woke up with hoof marks on my back. Not only that, I was laying in a pool of my own vomit.
Well, did you learn anything from that?
Yeah, I never drink near the pool of vomit. Oh, I've hit rock bottom.
Is it because you're drinking malt liquor?
No, because I'm doing radio at 7 a.m. I'm going to kill my agent. Oh.
So I guess you gods have some wild parties up on Mount Olympus.
Let me tell you. I remember one time Zeus,
yeah,
wasted, climbs, yeah, up on top of a column, Doric, Ionic.
Yeah.
I could never tell the difference. Anyway, he starts chanting, toga, 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 which is stupid because we all wear them all the time.
Yeah.
It'd be like somebody at a party today chanting, pants, pants, pants.
So I see you're wearing the traditional toga this morning.
Toga, hell, this is a sheet from a residential hotel. All my clothes were stolen by a hooker named Lupe.
Uh-oh.
Okay, now I expect calls, yeah, because people are going to say, you know what, Bacchus was actually the Roman version, but in terms of for comedy neophytes,
yeah,
Bacchus sounds funnier than Dionysius.
Yeah.
So we're taking a little liberty, so let's go forward.
Back to the script?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Now, you're a Greek god, right?
What do you mean by Greek? You asking if I'm a representative of the Eastern Mediterranean Hellenistic culture sphere? Are you intimating something else?
What would I be intimating?
Well, to some people, Greek is synonymous with unnatural sex acts.
Really? How do you think that came about?
Well, we are the world's biggest producer of olive oil.
Oh, man.
Besides, have you ever seen a typical Greek woman?
Oh, well, look, okay. When I think of Greeks, I think of Anthony Quinn.
Well, you'd be on the right track.
So you seem to symbolize some sort of a primeval striving within the human breast. Wasn't it the poet William Blake who wrote, "The road of excess leads to the palace of wisdom"?
I don't think William Blake ever woke up on the bathroom floor of a Motel 6 bleeding from the rectum.
Oh, yeah.
Let me tell you, folks, it don't feel like the palace of wisdom.
Okay. Well, talking to you, I'm starting to understand why there's so much suffering in the world. Some people think it's because the ways of God are inscrutable.
Hell no. Bottom line, I'm doing the best I can. You ever think God is in way over his head?
Yeah.
You people are impossible to ride herd on all the time. I turned my head for a second and it's like, holy crap, the Holocaust! No wonder I drink.
All right.
See, now that was pretty deep.
Yeah, right? I would say
but
so.
But you know what? Yeah. You got to leave them on a little, like, a bada boom. So let's take it home.
Finish the script?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. You're the god of wine. Are you also the god of all forms of intoxication?
Oh, no, I got assistance. Let me see. There's the twin gods of hard drugs, Crackus and Smackus. The god of drunken bar fights, Fracus. The god of malt liquor, Blackus.
What?
The god of stoned midnight munching.
Let me guess, Snackus?
Yeah. You're catching on.
And, of course, the god of bad comedy, Hackus.
No! See, before people call up and complain, that was scripted. And I mean, people were going to say, like, oh, my God, you're picking on that very creative man. But I actually wrote that for Mark to say, just like, you know, like Cher would get all the zingers. So it's like, he's Cher and I'm Sonny.
You know,
so
Bruce, before we finish this up, I just want to say that, you know, in assessing the script as a comedian myself, that, you know, the holy crap, the Holocaust line, tough to follow. But I think with the Akis, Macus, all the us's, I think you did well with that. I really did.
Yeah, it was a theme.
Yeah, I like it. I don't know if I'm going against the script here. What do you think, Riley?
Brilliant. Just brilliant. Mark, let me say totally on my own that this bit drips with philosophical insight. I hear echoes of Nietzsche in many of these lines. And anyone who is tempted to call in and complain about the Motel 6 line or the Blackest line can suck an egg.
There you go. Riley likes it.
All right. So what does the audience think about Bacchus?
Yeah!
Seriously, I don't think we can end this bit the way you scripted it. I think we're going to have Baucus on next week.
This is one of the proudest moments of my life.
All right, so Bruce has got a character for next week.
Uh-oh.
All right, when we come back, Mike Riley, Dog of the Week, 17 past the hour from Florent on Gansford Street. It's Morning Sedition.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Yeah, 22 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We're broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street, New York's Meatpacking District. Got free coffee. We got Rapture Watch coming up in momentarily. And we've got Bob Morris, who's going to come out here. Bob Morris is a columnist for the New York Times Sunday Style section, a writer and star of Assisted Living. Assisted Loving, I'm sorry. It's his account of helping his 80-year-old father search for love. That should be touching and pithy and good.
Oh, yeah.
Good radio. In just a minute, we are going to do your dog of the week. I just wanted to say we have a woman comes up to me on the break, and there's one of those moments where you're like, oh, look, someone who likes me. And she walks right into my face. She goes, I love your show, but I really like Rachel Maddow. And there's that moment of sort of like, oh, okay, well, good for you. But her name's Annie, and she wanted to hear Chris Kayla's Free Gum.
Okay. Free gum? Free gum? Free gum?
There you go.
That was
a very esoteric and nuanced request from a true fan, and I appreciate that.
There you go.
Right now, you know what time it is? It's time for Mark Riley's Dog of the Week.
Another week passes, and we're getting closer to the day we get to watch top people in the White House let out in cuffs.
Yeah.
But I digress. This week's dog is a mouthpiece, a lawyer. He works for that reprehensible former exterminator, Tom DeLay. One thing you can say for Dick DeGaren, he's got stones. And if, for those of you who don't know what that means, skewins of chicken with Texas prosecutor Ronnie Earle. DeGaren is trying to subpoena Earle to testify about alleged intimidation of not one, but two grand juries he impaneled. One indicted DeLay, the other did not. DeGaren says Earle and his staff unlawfully participated in grand jury deliberations. How does he know this? DeGaren doesn't say. The foreman of one grand jury vehemently denies that the prosecutor had improper conversations with him. Another DeGaren allegation. If all this sounds like grasping at straws, trust me, it is. DeLay is so drunk with power that his mouthpiece doesn't even try to deny that he did what Ronnie Earle alleges. At week's end, however, Earle struck back. He subpoenaed phone records of DeLay and his daughter, who serves as her father's chief campaign aide. Now, Dick DeGaren may not be the wrongdoer here. Tom DeLay is. Yet in carrying water for a corrupt, power-mad politician, he's more than distinguished himself as the Morning Sedition Dog of the Week.
That was a good one, man.
Yeah, say no. That's all I can say there. Find somebody else.
Well, that's a good segue to just say no, because chastity clubs on college campuses have been around in the South for a long time. Now it's gone Ivy League. Apparently Princeton University has a chastity club. Now, most of the members are Catholic, but the club is nonpartisan and non-denominational. People who want to take part in the society's activities don't need to sign a pledge or oath. Some members could have had sex in the past. It's open to everyone. And this was in the article. It said it's open to even those interested in exploring the idea of chastity intellectually. Man, sounds hot, doesn't it? Does that sound hot or what? Why don't they just call this club We Dare You Society?
Yeah, right?
You know what I mean? I mean, I just like the... The part of the pledge, I think part of the pledge week at the sororities and fraternities is going to be to try and have sex with a member of the chastity club.
Do they wear like a big C on their sweaters or something so people know?
The ironic thing is like nowhere on campus or probably in the state of New Jersey is sex going to be talked about more than in the chastity club.
I would imagine, yeah.
This is a hilarious quote from a member. One guy says, I don't even know if it was a man or a woman, actually. Quote, you don't just have sex to have sex. You have to be emotionally ready, end quote. Now, look, I agree. You definitely have to be emotionally ready to have sex just to have sex. You know, because
you do?
If you're not, it can be scary. But you know, once you're like, I'm just going to do it.
I got to redo my adolescence. I mean,
come on, man.
Hey, man. Listen.
Chastity. How the hell does anyone do that?
Hey, they got big not me t-shirts on, dude.
I don't understand. I mean, how come Wilhelm Reich didn't that work?
I don't know.
Is that too esoteric a reference? Wilhelm Reich was this genius, this sort of renegade protege of Freud's, who decided that if Freud was right and sexual repression did cause neurosis, why doesn't everybody just have sex whenever they want? You know, starting at 16, going all the way up till the end of life. And that would have been such an amazing culture, wouldn't it?
Didn't they make a law about that in the 60s?
Well, of course they made a law. Because if you realize that, if that actually happened, who would go to work? You know, why would you want to do anything else if you could just do that?
You're right. I'm leaving.
Am I revealing my inner perversion? Am I revealing that I have a compulsive sexual problem? I don't. I just think about it a lot.
I don't. I got a wife.
Yeah, okay. Well, so do I. What does that mean? We're going to be back with Rob Morris and Rapture Watch. So stay with us. It's 27 Past Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
With Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
All right, it's 34 past the hour. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey!
You're listening to Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. We're broadcasting live from Restaurant Florence on Gansevoort Street, New York's Meatpacking District. There's free coffee, books, prizes. It's all going to happen. We got Rapture Watch coming up. We got Lawton Smalls coming up. This next guest is going to support my thesis that that most of life is about sex and food. Am I right? And,
correct.
Of course, for Annie.
Freedom!
All right, here we go. Our next guest writes the Age of Dissonance column for the New York Times Sunday Style section. He's also written and is performing in a one-man play called Assisted Loving, which chronicles his 80-year-old father's search for new love. Please welcome Bob Morris to the show. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah. Good morning.
So, you know, my grandfather got remarried like almost immediately after my grandmother passed away, and I guess that your father, after your mom or his wife passed away, had the same sort of desire to do that. And
yeah.
How did that unfold? He actually asked you to find
how it unfolded. Was it unfolded with a weekly newspaper, a free weekly newspaper? He had circled all these personals ads,
uh-huh,
in it. And then he said, you know, Bob, would you call these women for me? Because you can't do it on a cell phone, and that's all I've got.
Yeah.
So I actually proceeded to call. And I didn't like the sound of the voicemail. You know, these women, I would call, and they'd be like, hello, this is Seal, leave a message. And I would hang up because I didn't want my father hanging out with something with an accent like that. And it just, like, went on and on and on and on for, like, 5 months. I went through like 25 women with him.
With all the same voice or variations of it?
It seemed close to the same variation. He hangs out in Great Neck and Palm Beach, two of the most high-strung area codes in America. And sometimes I would get calls from these women. Like one woman called me up. She said, oh, hi, Bob. I'm a friend of an editor at the New York Times, and my name is, well, let's say Mimi, and I would like to go out with your dad because I'm drop-dead gorgeous and he sounds great. And I was like, no, you're not taking his phone number. Forget about it. So it went on and on and on like that.
Well, it sounds like you're being maybe overprotective. Is that possible?
I was, you know, it's partly that. It's also that I was just saying to Mark here that your parents get to the end of their life, right?
Yeah.
And maybe, even if you are a nasty New Yorker, you want to be a little nicer to them. You want to, like, enjoy their company. You
yeah.
want to like them and love them.
Yeah.
So what if my father hooks up with some neurotic piece of, you know, trash? I mean, I didn't want him to do that. And so I was very protective. You know?
Yeah, were you projecting at all?
Definitely, because we're all very, you know, we become incredibly neurotically picky in this culture. Single people are just getting worse than ever, you know, with this internet dating stuff. You can just discard, delete. So that's what we did.
But now, suppose your father met somebody that he was really into and you weren't, then what?
Well, I tried. I mean, it's ultimately we lucked out. He found a really nice woman, but I mean, there was one time when he was supposed to be liking this woman who was seemed really great to me. She was younger. She was rich. And then she at one point she told him that he was just filler until Mr. Wright comes along.
How old was this woman?
She was younger, maybe 70. The thing is, he was 80 when he was going through all this. So he was a teenager. I was single.
Uh-huh.
And he told me once that I was probably dating vicariously through him.
Sure. But wait, now, please tell me that 70-year-old woman who was waiting for Mr. Wright had been married once before?
Yeah, I mean...
Okay, all right, because that's several times.
Most of the people, and I hope you all don't have to go through this, but most men in particular, if they've had a decent marriage, a long one, then they marry within 3 years, even at my dad's age, which was 80, so watch out.
Well, yeah. You know, what was interesting to me is that when my grandmother passed away, this was a long time ago, both of them have passed on since, but my grandfather, got married almost immediately, and the family didn't like the woman that he married because that they felt that she was using him for sex.
Right. And a lot of them think it's for money.
Was that part of it? I mean, it seems to me that companionship
It was not about money.
But I mean, was it about sex?
Companionship. He uses the term. He likes to keep company with someone. I mean,
that's old school.
That generation, the post-World War II man, definitely needs a woman at his side. But also, I think that my father he loved making somebody happy in that kind of way, an intimate way. I mean, sexual, I don't know. I mean, at one point I said, what is going on in that department, because I'm an idiot, I asked such a question. And he says, well, the effects of the prostate surgery last year really actually were helpful, and with the pills they have today, I could go all night if I want to.
Ooh.
It was like too much information. Overshare. Thank you.
So now, how did your relationship with your father through this process of you I don't know, what would you call it? You were sort of acting as a middleman for him.
Right.
How did that change your relationship with him?
He was so inspired to fall in love that I, a totally cynical, terminally single New Yorker, actually in the process figured out how to be in love myself.
Oh.
So that's, that's like...
Where's the little, clap?
Because, I mean, he kept telling me as... I became his buddy in this ridiculous chase, and he kept telling me what a great guy I was, and maybe a little teeny bit of it leaked in.
Oh, my God, that's so nice, because I hate my father.
Right.
And,
he may be listening,
No, I'm kidding. My dad's all right. He's gotten better. But I guess what I'm responding to is that when you were younger, it's weird. It seems that if they live long enough, they get a shot at actually showing up for you emotionally. Did you find that happen? Was he detached when you were younger?
Yes. I mean, in a way, you're right. There was definitely less tennis and less running around and no career as a lawyer anymore. And so he did have that time.
Well, that's very nice.
That kids have to recognize that, not to rush their parents off the phone quite so much 24/7. I got to go. I have a date. I have an appointment. I have to go to work. I'm busy. Who the hell wants to hear that? Do you like hearing that? No.
That's why you guys thank God for caller ID and just go, I'm not taking
it. I'm not home.
We're talking to Bob Morris. He writes the Age of Dissonance column in the Sunday New York Times, but he's talking now about his show, Assisted Loving. It's now playing at the Lucille Lortel Theater here in New York.
Hey, can you give the phone number? 212-279-4200. Tickets cheap, $20. Sunday and Monday night last shows.
Well, you don't want to sound desperate, Bob.
I am desperate. I'm desperately dating for my father.
Uh-oh. Hey, Bob, would you describe your father as romantic, or was he more practical?
No, terribly romantic.
Terribly.
Singer, a crooner. He skirts the surface of life in a very happy way, sort of like the Jewish Bob Hope kind of approach.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Really? Does he suffer from bipolar disorder?
Who doesn't?
Exactly.
ADD, bipolar, irritable bowels, the whole thing.
So I'll have to say I don't suffer from a couple of those.
No.
Yes, but I have something to
look
forward to.
Keep drinking the coffee.
So now it's a... How does the show unfold? It's a monologue exclusively?
Yeah, it's a solo with music. I have a brilliant accordion player who eggs me on in a very, it's like a Catskill shtick approach to something that I hope gets deep. I've seen some crying in the audience.
So are you attracting people of your father's age?
It's both. It's kind of great.
Yeah. Now, you do a lot of music, and you've got the ukulele with you. Would you like to sing a tune?
I don't know. Is any of you ready for this early in the morning?
Ukulele music.
my dad, you know, he was a big parody writer during, like, World War II. In fact, he never went to war. He just, like, wrote parodies at his training camp. So I wrote this one for him. Suck up those blood pressure pills. Medicare pays the bills. Hello, 80. Doggy bags packed in the fridge. Time to kick some ass in bridge. Hello, 80. Can't complain, life doesn't need improvement. I just had a perfect bowel movement. Maybe we should stop.
No, do it.
Bring it home.
That's it?
That's
why did you get dirty?
Come to the show.
You just locked them in. They were ready. They were right there.
Gotta leave them hungry.
They were eating out of your ukulele hands. So wait, now you all of a sudden you left this weird dangling thing that your father wrote.
Dangling thing.
That your father. All right, I didn't put that in it. You did.
All right, you want to hear the rest of the song? It's two more lines.
I'm not gonna beg, Bob. All right,
cell phone stuck to my head. Why get off? I'm not dead. A-D, hello. Speed it up.
Yeah.
A-D, hello. Okay, that's the end of the song.
But before we let you go here, what is a parody writer in World War II?
He sticks around training camp the whole time, and the night before he was finally getting shipped off to war, he ate 6 donuts, woke up with a tummy ache the next day, and never went.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's like, Dad, come on, didn't you want to be a hero? And he says, well, if I had been, there wouldn't be any me, and then there wouldn't be any you, so I guess it kind of worked out for the best.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Bob Morris, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
The show is Assisted Loving. It is now playing at the Lucille Lortel Theater. If you want to get tickets, 212-279-4200. For those of you people who are Bob's father's age, 212-279-4200. That was not an ageist comment. It was actually helpful. And you know what? Just for those people again, 212-279-4200. I can hear people going, wait, I don't have a pencil. I don't have a pencil. Now the man's gone.
Move the bed of your soul. Where's that?
It's 44 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition live from Florence. In a second, we'll have Rapture Watch.
You're listening to Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Now, we're not homosexual, but we are willing to learn.
Air America Radio.
Hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition, broadcasting live from Restaurant Florence on Gansevoort Street in New York's Meatpacking District. There's still plenty of free coffee. There's still prizes. We still got Planet Bush's Lawton Smalls in the wings. I got Mark Riley right here.
Yeah.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great.
We're doing all right. The Bible's Book of Revelations portends the end of days and the second coming of the Christian Messiah, one of our president's favorite stories. Though no one knows when the end times will come, there are signs that will appear to men. Here on Morning Sedition, we won't let you be caught off guard by the end of the world. That's why we present this week's Rapture Watch with MILF Cardinal Milfington of the recently disgraced Diocese of Janesville, Wisconsin. Your grace.
Take heed, all ye who dare seek the fruits of the Tithonus daughters of Molech the first, nephew to Molech the second, son of Molech the third, and father of Molech the confused. Look about thee, thou blaspheming purveyors of feng shui. Your souls have achieved an optimum flow of chi with Satan, and your hearts become oriented along a north-south axis with damnation. Step lightly, you lickers of toads, now players of idle games of cribbage, and every real estate broker who advertises no-fee apartments only to later hit you up for a bogus application fee. God will smite your rental investment with a tenant who breeds ferrets in your charming walk-in kitchen.
Yeah.
And from your secret parts, like a chicken's egg, shall a fiery serpent hatch and take wing. In short, God will wreak colossal vengeance upon thee. Either that or set fire to a bag of poop on your doorstep. It's hard to tell sometimes. He's trippy that way. Listen carefully, heathens, for last abdominal was packed with prophetic end time indicators. A professor in Texas discovered a two-headed snake. In California, a woman hit a bear with her motorcycle. In Australia, a man ran into a kangaroo with his motorcycle. A dog in Seattle was found nursing a baby squirrel. Yeah.
Yeah, I heard that.
The man who played Chewbacca is about to become a U.S. citizen. In China, scientists dug up a 4,000-year-old bowl of noodles.
Wow.
And in Belgium, a man coughed up a screw. Which one of these prophetic end-time indicator stories does not belong with the others, Mark?
Maybe I'm guessing the 4,000-year-old noodle story. Or...
Really?
Yeah. Well,
I would have picked the creepy screw story thing. Anyway, as a reward, please allow me to anoint you with this complimentary bottle of holy water.
All right, well, okay. Thanks, Cardinal, I guess.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
And while you're at it, you can have some of this, too.
Ow! My eyes are burning! Why did you spray me with mace?
I don't know. Some people don't react too well to the holy water. No matter. Are you ready to rapture, Mark?
Oh, God. Yeah, sure, I guess.
Okay, according to the AP, or Antichrist Press, Japan is going to require owners of dangerous exotic pets and animals to implant global positioning microchips in their pets so they can be tracked. Mm. Yeah, what do you think of that, you godless stage puppet?
I don't know. It sounds like a pretty good way to track them down in case they get loose and threaten innocent people.
Okay, that's one way to look at it. But the more rational interpretation would be that Satan is assembling his remote-controlled beast army to invade America, take over the world, and ravage our virgin daughters, what's left of them. For it was prophesied in Revelation 2.5 men, and I quote it, "And the dark prince will put his mark on all creatures, great and small, followed by 10 entertaining years of the misadventures of a staff of country veterinarians in 1940s Yorkshire. But not before the beast destroys God's temple atop a mountain called Moriah."
Wow, did you say Moriah?
Moriah.
Oh, my God.
Moriah. The rain is Tess, the fire Joe, and they call the wind Moriah.
The hell is that?
Arg, Satan! Your powers are strong today. They would have let me in my high school theater's theater department had you not unleashed your unholy powers of fear, sweat, and acne. Mandata kvakasa frittata. Thank goodness I am now able to channel those painful traumas into positive energy. For as surely as God created the universe 80 years ago, so too will all of you be slaves of Chewbacca and that dork who coughed up a screw. We'll all be on the planet Alcyon in the Pleiades cluster, standing at the throne of Jesus and his dance coach, Patrice. Until then, fornicators, keep on fornicating, and we'll keep the light on for you. In hell.
Uh-oh. Yeah.
Cardinal Milkington. Cardinal Milkington, played by the
inimitable,
gifted, and talented Jim Earl. Jim, thank you so much for bringing your love and wisdom and entertaining disposition to the show.
You're so very welcome, Mark, and it's been a pleasure serving you all these years.
Oh, man. Are you coming over Sunday to look at Astoria?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Do you want... I really need an apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, really? If you say that on the air, I'm sure that you'll get email at the website. Like, we'd love to have Cardinal Milkington at our house.
Oh, yeah, sure.
I'd like a big, expansive one-bedroom for around 1,200.
Oh, yeah, right. You got
a
prayer.
You should ask Freddie Ferrer, see what he had to say about that. Maybe he could find that
He'll
for
build
you.
You one if he's mayor.
Well, thanks, Jim. You're
okay,
doing.
Yeah,
I love everything you do. I think.
Yeah, I'll really be there Sunday, by the way.
Oh, okay. That's nice. Got to hurt me on the way out. We are here helping. We are here at helping Florent as opposed to performing our show. Celebrate 20 years in the Meatpacking District. This celebration kicks off in earnest next week with various festivities, culminating in a benefit gala at the Roxy Nightclub next Saturday, October 22nd. There's going to be performances, cocktails,
uh-oh,
you name it, man. Also, we got some people here in the audience that drop by to alert everybody that there is a Drive Out the Bush Regime campaign going on. They're going down to D.C. They're mobilizing for November 2nd, 2005. If you want information about how you can get involved or what to do, where to go, they need drivers, they need people. It's www.worldcan'twait.org. Check that out if you want to get involved in a political action.
Why not get involved in a political
action? Well, that's why I'm trying to get people to run for Congress. For God's sakes, run for Congress. You can go to wellstoneaction.org to find out information. You know what? I'm really serious about this, Riley. I think we should sponsor a candidate. We'll find out from the up and ups, you know, the people that are sitting there wondering whether I should work here anymore, whether or not we could actually sponsor a candidate in the congressional campaign. I think that would be great.
Dan Pashman for Congress?
Yeah, why don't you run?
Yeah, man, run. Run, Dan,
All right, all right, we'll do that.
You could totally be a congressman.
Yeah, you captivate audiences wherever we go.
Oh, my God, Riley, that's the best idea. Whose was it? Was it yours?
I think.
Okay, hey. That's you. Why don't we do that?
All right, I'm gonna run for Congress.
Thank you.
I think Dan Pashman.
How many signatures do you need to get on the ballot?
Five.
I
don't know.
He's like, how many signatures do you need? Five. Like, oh, that's that little? Did I just get myself into something?
Hey, if a former exterminator can do it, Mark, I think I can do it.
Well, I'm not going to bully you into it, but we want to sponsor somebody. But you've got the juice,
give it
man.
A shot, man.
We're going to get in touch with the Wellstone Action people. We're going to sponsor candidates all over the country on Morning Sedition. And
wow.
Maybe I will do it. We'll see.
Hopelessly optimistic, OCD, you got everything it takes. We'll be back with Lawton Smalls, 57 Past, Morning Sedition. That's Laurent, America Radio. Morning Sedition program. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
We're broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street, New York's Meatpacking District. We got free coffee. We got prizes. We got Lawton Smalls coming up. Comedian Russ Manieve, author and literary, what would you call him? A raconteur. Tom Beller will be here. Looking forward to that in just a couple minutes. Let's get into a little bit of news, Riley. We were talking to Freddie Ferrer earlier today, and we told him about apparently not only does money help you buy a boat in this town, but it also puts you on the inside line for advance notice on terror alerts. At least two emails revealing last week's terror alerts were sent to select groups of business and arts executives before Bloomberg was even fully briefed on it. What is that about?
Well, it's about somebody in the Department of Homeland Security who will soon be looking for work. Governor Pataki has demanded a full-scale investigation into this, as has Police Commissioner Ray Kelly, because, see, when you first see the headline, your initial instinct is to say, well, somebody in the Bloomberg administration must have tipped somebody off early.
Right.
That's not how it happened. Somebody in D.C. sent these emails out, and it looks like, unless Bush really has to take time out of his busy schedule to thwart this thing, somebody is going to get found out.
Well, it's like that Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. I mean, I can totally understand how it happened. You know where he heard by someone who knew somebody that there was going to be a terror threat? How could that not happen in the world of emails? It doesn't seem like there's a real crime committed.
Well, it's not going to be whether or not it's a crime. Nobody's going to get prosecuted criminally for this. But somebody in Washington, if they trace this back to Homeland Security, Michael Chertoff is going to have some firing to do.
Oh, all right. Well, look, a Homeland Security spokesman said this. I thought this was funny, that they've looked into the emails and said that they weren't significant. And, quote, at best, they were based on anecdotal accounts of very limited information, end quote. Wow, so that means they could have had the same source in Iraq that the Homeland Security Department did.
Well, you know, this is going to really increase the love between Homeland Security and the NYPD. You know what a great relationship they've had up until now. This is really going to cement it. Ray Kelly, I think, would probably want to box whoever sent these emails, and I think he'd win.
As we move towards the episode of Cops that's going to be shot at the White House, where the entire administration is to be walked out in cuffs, what we're finding here is Tom DeLay, in the recent investigations and, of course, two indictments against him, has been forced to turn over home and campaign phone records from the period he is charged with conspiracy to launder illegal corporate donations. He is also forced to turn over receipts about an auto purchase. He's also forced to show all his his phone records that are even personal. So they're really going after this guy, despite the fact that he has begun to put a lot of money into slandering Ronnie Earl on television. It doesn't matter. If he's so desperate, why doesn't he just tell the truth? Because clearly he's guilty or he wouldn't have to take these actions.
Well, I have a question for you.
Uh-huh.
Do you really think that Tom DeLay thinks he did anything wrong?
Well, that's interesting. If he doesn't, wouldn't that make him delusional and dangerous as opposed to psychotic and dangerous?
Thank you very much. That's exactly the point. Because Tom DeLay doesn't think he's done anything wrong. Here's a man who has apparently violated the law, who used the Republican National Committee as a money laundering operation like the Escobars down in Colombia used to use. And now you have a situation where he's saying, well, Ronnie Earl is the problem, this one's the problem, that one's the problem, I'm not the problem. The fact is, I think he is delusional, I think he is dangerous, and God knows what he's been, what we've been thinking having him as House Majority Leader up until now.
Well, you know, it's hilarious, is Ronnie Earl, like, you know, when he tried to, subpoena Ronnie Earl, you know, threw a subpoena back at him, and Ronnie Earl's taking all these hits. The prosecutor's taking all these hits, and he's basically just saying, yeah, okay, whatever, Tom. We'll see what happens in court. He's being very passive about it. He's taking the right tact on this one.
Yeah.
I would like to quote George Bush from October 2000. Quote, in my administration, we will ask not only what is legal, but what is right. Not what the lawyers allow, but what the public deserves, end quote. Well, as from all indications now, the entire administration is in chaos. They're stabbing each other in the back. Everybody beneath Bush and around him is being indicted or investigated for one reason or another. And I think he's probably just sitting there going, where's my money?
Well, yeah, and I mean, Bush, at this point, what else can you say? But apparently the American people don't deserve the best because that's not what we got.
Well, you know, we thank God we have somebody who's going to help us out here. Since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. So here now is Planet Bush Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls.
Yeah.
Good morning.
Good morning, Lawton.
Hey, Lawton. Hey. Thank you.
Yeah.
Hey, good morning, Mark.
Yeah.
You know, Harriet Myers sent God a letter that says, you're the greatest.
Oh, all right, all right.
You're cool.
Okay, all right. Lawton, buddy, Lawton, let me just say, this Harriet Myers situation must be tying you in knots, man.
Spit it out, Mark. Leave your little games for your liberal abortion tea parties.
All
what
right.
is on your mind?
Your boy Bush picked one of the of his unqualified, brown-nosing cronies to be on the Supreme Court, and conservatives are pissed off about it, and now they're clawing at each other. It's beautiful, Lawton.
Are you seriously implying that even one conservative has had so much as a passing thought questioning a selection by President George W. two-terms mandate Bush? Are you really saying that in public to people? Because I'd worry about
it. Let me read you something, my
All
friend.
Right, I'm
quote,
gonna...
if Harriet Myers were not a crony of the President of the United States, her nomination would be a joke, as it would have occurred to no one else to nominate her, end quote. You know who wrote that, my friend?
Nancy Pelosi? Jello Biafra?
No. No, Lawton. Charles Krauthammer.
Oh.
From the Washington Post, one of the most conservative columnists around, my friend.
Well, that's just one. I mean, maybe Chuck was having acid reflux that day, got a bad pork cutlet or something.
Uh-huh.
I've had that.
All right, how about this quote,
one
my friend?
All right, buddy.
All right, how about this quote?
Yeah.
Quote, I'm demoralized. Surely this is a pick from weakness, end quote.
Okay, Dixie Chicks.
Try.
Dixie Chicks.
Try William Kristol from the Weekly Standard, one of yours. Hates her, Lawton.
William Kristol?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's kind of disappointing. You sure it wasn't Billy Kristol?
All right. That's different. All right. That's funny. That's very clever today. All right, how about this one? All right, this one's good. Quote, there is nothing on the record to suggest that Harriet Myers has the qualifications, that she has the understanding of the Constitution, end quote.
Sean Penn.
Uh-huh. Very funny. How about Alan Keyes, my friend? Yes.
Ooh.
It's a long list, Lawton, and some of your favorite people are on that list. Rush Limbaugh, George Will,
no.
Senator Brownback of Kansas,
no.
Senator Coburn of Oklahoma.
No.
They all opposed Myers, all of them. Robert Bork said, quote, it's kind of a slap in the face to the conservatives who have been building up a conservative legal movement for the last 20 years, end quote. What do you think of that, huh? All of them lined up against Bush.
Well, you You know, Bork's always been kind of a loose cannon. I never trusted that beard of his.
What about you, Lawton? Aren't you outraged that Bush picked a White House insider with no judicial experience instead of a judge with solid conservative credentials who could move the court to the right on abortion and gay rights? What about you, Lawton? Where do you stand?
No, I mean, he's the fairly elected president with a divine mandate to lead the nation, and we all have to defer to his superior judgment.
So you're saying that Keyes, Kristol, Krauthammer, and all the rest are disloyal? No. Are you calling Rush Limbaugh a traitor, Lawton Smalls?
I never said that. You're spinning.
All right. Stop. What about your loyalty to conservatism? If Bush picks someone who isn't conservative enough, isn't it your responsibility as a true conservative to oppose him, or is that not important to you, Lawton?
Of course it's important to me. I am a conservative, but he's the president, and he's the president.
You got a decision to make, Lawton. Your president at your values, huh? Which is it going to be, your president or your values? You can't have both there, Lawton.
Stop it!
Yeah.
Stop it! Oh, God. Are so mean! I hate it when they fight. I hate it. I don't want to think anymore. It's a liberal plot.
No.
If somebody puts something in the water in Washington that makes us fight, it's like a bird flu or something.
All right. Take it easy. Take it easy. You're freaking out. All right.
I blame you.
All right. I didn't mean to upset you this much. I meant to upset you a little, but you're really coming on him. Okay.
Mark?
Yes?
Have you ever had two opposing thoughts in your head at one time?
Yes, all the time, Lawton.
Well, I have it, and it's scary.
Lawton,
it's so scary.
I know, Lawton. Just hear me out here. I think you're taking a step toward a larger reality, Lawton. The world is a complicated place, my friend.
Mark, I'm starting to think you may be right.
Wow. You okay now? Huh? You okay now? All right.
You know, those old boys are going to come around. There's a family squabble. Cheney will have a barbecue. Pretty soon they'll all be peas in a Jesus pot again. This thing will just blow right over.
All right.
This is
goodbye,
they love her, really.
Goodbye, Lon.
All right. God loves you, Mark, though. Deal with it.
I'm trying. Lon Smalls, as portrayed by the inimitable Kent Jones. We'll be back. We're going to be right here at Florence with free coffee. You can still come on down. My friend, comedian Russ Meneve, is going to come out and talk to us in just a second. So hang out. It's Morning Sedition. It's 16 past the hour.
Hi, this is Lawton Smalls, Morning Sedition's Planet Bush Bureau Chief. You know why I'm praying for you? Because you're listening to Mark and Mark on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Good morning, it's Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Hey!
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're broadcasting live from Restaurant Florent on Gansevoort Street, New York's Meatpacking District. There's still plenty of free coffee. Thomas Beller is going to come up and talk about his new book and his website, Mr. Beller's Neighborhood. We're also helping out Florence celebrate 20 years in the Meatpacking District. This celebration kicks off in earnest next week with various festivities, culminating in a benefit gala at the Roxy Nightclub next Saturday, October 22nd. There'll be performances, cocktails, food, some of the area's top restaurants. It is going to be fun. Right now, a dear friend of mine is here. Our next guest was recently featured
You are a dear friend, man. You babysat me in China.
All right. He was recently featured in New York Magazine's list of the top 10 funniest New Yorkers you never heard of. That had to hurt. He's also a frequent guest on Last Call. That's on really late. Uh-huh. And the Tonight Show, which a lot of people watch. Please welcome comedian Russ Meneve.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you very much, Mark.
It's so funny because...
Backhanded already? Backhanding me?
But we have this weird relationship, but I don't realize it, that I enjoy hurting you because it makes me laugh.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, yeah.
You feel good about it? That's beautiful.
It's not really hurting, though. We have this band. He went to China. We did comedy in Beijing, China. Yeah. We flew, like, what was it, like 20 hours?
Yeah.
And then got sick because, you know, they served us a bowl.
This story.
We remember that? We were there, and we're out to dinner in China, and they bring over this vat of boiling water, and the waiter brings over live fish and throws them into the water.
Yeah, it's like, you ever see Indiana Jones, like, when they're walking through the street, and it's like that basket market? It's like a little hidden place, and this guy's and he brings out raw meat and all kinds of crazy food, and the broth that you dip it in, he brings live fish out, throws live fish in the broth, boiling, all right?
Yeah.
And this half ape is just eating everything in sight, and he's eating with the food's flying everywhere. I'm getting very sick. And then the dead fish that's in the broth, he looks at the guy and goes, "Hey, can I eat that too?"
And that's what you looked at me and you went, "I gotta go.
I gotta go. I had to go. Sick, and I was like, you know what? I'm gonna die in China. That's it. I was in a hotel room.
You were sick, but it was a good time, man. So we got a good audience. I think the rain stopped some people. I'm glad you showed up. Does the weather bother you?
Yeah, it does.
Why?
It does.
What? What's the matter? What's the matter?
Well, buddy? I'm suicidal. You know that. Anybody suicidal?
Yeah.
Isn't it amazing when you're a little kid, you're like, suicide? Why would somebody want to kill themselves? Then you get older, you're like, oh, I get it. That makes total sense. But the weather's a drag, right? The cold weather's coming already.
Yeah.
You can do anything fun here in the city in the winter. Like build a snowman. 2 seconds later, you see a homeless guy wearing a scarf and a top hat eating a carrot walking down the street, right?
That's giving back to the community, Russ.
Yeah, well. So what are you doing? Are you eating that food already?
Yeah, what are you kidding?
We have eating disorders, me and Mark.
This is true. I'll admit this. It's not part of an act. Russ and I are one of the many male anorexics in this world right now.
Yeah.
Because literally, someone gave this to us. Thank you, by the way. But when I see a bag of caramel popcorn with chocolate in it, my first response is like, oh, no.
I know.
Now I'm going to have to eat this.
That's bad. I started a diet. Isn't the first day of the diet the best? Right? You get up, you throw out all your sweets. Yeah, that night you're eating chocolate out of a garbage can. Right? I'm going to throw you out. I love you.
You need a pizza? I'll get a pizza in here.
Oh, God. I think I like food better than sex.
Really?
Because I was watching a porno, and this pizza delivery guy was just giving it to this housewife. And all I could think was, oh, that pizza's getting cold.
We do have, like, I remember that time watching you eat sushi. That was exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to bring up personal things, but I have such a deep appreciation and love for you.
Yeah, let's go back to the original point where you enjoy hurting me because it makes you laugh.
It was, right? but I think...
You hate to bring up personal things?
I think it helps you. I think it helps you when I point out these flaws in your character. Yeah. I'm just trying to help out. It's called codependence. Live it. Love it.
Yeah, I don't like you, Mark, to be honest. So...
But that night we ate sushi. Yeah, this isn't even. Look at it. We're having this conversation. What else is going on in terms of how is it being on this list? Are you there yet? Almost funny. Or what was
why
it?
Are you so mean.
No, I mean what. But no,
you're
funny,
awful.
No, funniest people that no one's ever heard of. That's it.
Well, now they've heard of me. I'm on this very popular radio show, right? See, I give love back.
Yeah, this is our entire audience right here. this radio show goes out all over the country, and here in New York, these are all the people that listen to it that are in this room right now.
Well, it's all over the country.
Yeah, it is.
I just got back from L.A.
How was that?
Great.
Yeah?
And I'll tell you, isn't air travel amazing? Especially for you women. Women, do you realize that when you're on a plane, your vagina is flying?
That's a good one.
You think about that a couple times, it gets funnier, I swear to God. You should put a little napkin over it like a cape.
Uh-huh.
That's it. That's all I got.
That's all you got?
Come on. This woman almost threw up.
You know what's interesting about that joke, Russ, is that you've been doing this a long time, and out of all the arrows in your quill, you said, hey, you know what? The flying vagina is the one to go with at breakfast.
I don't know what it is. It's such a highbrow show. I figure, why not dumb it down a little bit? It's for my audience.
I think disembodied flying vaginas is actually funnier.
Everybody in the room is like, I know why he's never been heard of.
Well, you know what? I'm going to give you a shot to redeem yourself.
No,
you're going to hang out for a minute because I think that these people that are eating breakfast and had to entertain flying vaginas deserve something a little more on the level. So we're going to stay with Russ Manee for a couple more minutes. We've got Tom Beller coming out here. It's 27 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition coming to you live from Restaurant Laurent here in New York.
Tradition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour. Good morning. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program, broadcasting live from Florent Restaurant here in New York City's Meatpacking District. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
It's amazing. We are here at Florent Restaurant, New York, but we go out around the world, Riley. We go. People stream in Sweden. They stream in Japan. They stream in France.
Yeah.
Wait, is Russ on? Turn Russ on.
I'm catching flag for the flying vagina joke. You shut me off.
Well, this is that's Russ Meneve. He's a comedian. He's been on The Tonight Show and on Last Call with Carson Daly, and he's funny.
How are you, Russ?
He's still here, man. I'm all right, man. My friend, look at them. They're like, all right, what's he got?
Yeah. Well.
So do you? How much time do you spend? When we were in China, we didn't have computers. They didn't even have the internet, I think, yet. We were in China.
They're not that bright in China.
Now stop it!
Right. I'm telling you, they're not.
You're not going to warm yourself.
Well,
to
Asians,
this audience.
Everything Asians are so smart. I mean, you guys remember the Asian delivery guy that got trapped in that jammed elevator for 2 days?
Yeah.
I think he hit too many buttons because he couldn't find the R for lobby.
Oh boy.
Come on.
Wow.
That's
wow.
Another great. It's the crowd now, Mark. Hey,
no,
even the Asians are raffing at that one. Come on.
You know, if you.
That joke is hilarious. Come on. Somebody say something.
This is my God. I understand where you come from, Russ, and I love you, and I think you're doing great work here, but this is a progressive radio network.
I have a tag for the flying vagina. Don't make me do it.
All right. You have not gotten married. You have not gotten engaged. I've known you for, 10 years, and you just can't do it because why?
Yeah, look who's talking.
And what do you... What?
How many are you...
I got married.
Yeah. All right. Is it three?
No.
All right. I just tack one on. Just really send it. No, I just had a break. I broke up with this girl by email. Is that a bad way to do it? I don't mean to remember the fact that I did it by email or the fact that I CC'd my new girlfriend.
No.
Is that okay, Mark?
That was right?
Yeah, okay.
Hey, look, I'm just trying
dad.
To...
I need your approval. I'll never get it.
Come on, we'll buy you pizza. It'll be all right.
Uh-oh.
No, I'm just trying to buffer. I'm just trying to do my job. At least I'm letting you talk. Does Jay let you talk, or haven't you sat down next to him?
I have sat down several times. I've been on the show, and I can tell you what it's like to be on the show.
Sure, I can tell you what it's like to be on Letterman.
I knew you were going
to
say that.
You want to know what it's like to be on Letterman, the one that that people respect, or... No, all Jay's right. good if you like circus.
Why are you attacking me?
I'm not. What are you talking about? I don't understand.
All right, there's going to be a fight in here. I feel it.
Uh-oh. So you're seeing someone now?
Yeah, I am.
That's good.
Yeah, great girl.
Uh-huh. Do you have something against marriage, or do you have what?
No, I mean, I like marriage.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it. It's just hard to do, you know? My buddy just got married in Jersey. He actually tied those tin cans to the back of the limo. How white trash is that, right?
Yeah.
You can do that in the city. By the time we got to your hotel, there'd be 10 dead homeless guys hanging to those cans. Sorry, wrong room for that joke. But anyway.
You know, you can't say I didn't try. You know what I mean?
I'm trying. Let's change the subject. Get off relationships.
Do that Mel Tillis joke you used to do. You remember that?
Nah, I'm not doing that joke.
What do you got? Come on.
Something
that's not going to hurt people's feelings.
Well, Lance Armstrong's, you think he's doing drugs? What do you think? You think he's doing steroids?
I think maybe.
I'll tell you what, if you're under suspicion of steroids, you can't walk around with a name like Lance Armstrong, right?
Yeah.
It's like trying to beat a drug rap and your name is Cokie McCrackpipe.
That's good. Russ Meneve.
Oh,
what do you want?
You're an awful person.
What are you talking about, an awful
you're
person?
Awful.
I'm going to have to filter through 900 emails from Asian people because of you.
All right, man.
No, where are you playing tonight? Because there's a lot of people that want to go.
I'm here at Gotham Comedy Club. Caroline's at the Comedy Cellar this weekend.
I think I'm at the Comedy Cellar, but I forgot to confirm my spots. I'll let you know later because we'll hang out later because we're going to need to talk about this over three pizzas.
You're right.
All right. Russ Meneve, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks for having me.
You bet. Thanks for coming. Hang out, though. You going to hang out later? We'll have breakfast. Hang out a minute.
All right.
What, are you
going
to go back to bed? All right, here we go. Our next guest, in his new book of essays, writes about
Sex Addicts, Bagels, Thunderbirds, the New York Knicks, and Eileen Ford Models. His book of essays, How to Be a Man, Seems from a Protracted Boyhood, was released in August. He's the co-founder and editor of Open City Magazine and the man behind the website, MrBellersNeighborhood.com. He joins us live here at Restaurant Florent. Please welcome Thomas Beller.
Yeah.
Thomas Beller. Thomas Beller, the tallest Jew in the world.
Thank you.
Are you the tallest Jew in the world?
I believe so.
Good. So tell me, you've got a new book. You and I met Thomas through a mutual friend, Sam Lipsyte, great American writer Sam Lipsyte. I met great American writer Thomas Beller. So what did you learn about manhood? Because I think I need some pointers. Is there a theme?
Is there a theme to man? I was amazed to hear you torturing the flying vagina guy.
Oh, that's something we do all the time.
But it was so interesting. You were heckling him about his failure to, you know, achieve this benchmark in life, which mm-hmm. you said you'd got to.
Which one was that? Well, I didn't remember him. We were having a conversation where I was engaging in
heckling him. You were belittling him for his failure to have gotten married.
Oh, okay, that one.
If you can't do that, you know, you're worthless.
No, I didn't. I don't think I implied that. I think you're reading into it, Thomas. But what are you trying to hide from us?
Oh,
please.
On the contrary, I was trying to work around to advertising the fact that I just got married.
Oh! Yeah. Look at Russ is sitting back there going, see, Marin's friend's going to take him on for my benefit. Yeah, I don't think so, buddy. So you got married?
I got married in the summer, and my beautiful, gorgeous wife, Elizabeth, is in the audience. Can we have a hand for my beautiful wife right there?
That was what we call brilliant wife pandering in the business.
One of my recently acquired skills. But
yeah.
I was amazed to hear you giving this guy such a hard time.
Yeah.
This book, the last piece in the book is this piece called The Floating Armoire, which had to do with basically getting together with Elizabeth and moving in, and this promise I made to her that she shouldn't take this armoire that was at her house where all of her clothes were stored, and instead she should let me build this beautiful piece of furniture that was going to be the seat of all of the great sweaters and things like that that are very important. And it turned out to be a real challenge and terrifying at a certain point, but at any rate I managed to get the thing done, and we're now, partly because of that, happily married.
Because of the building.
Because I didn't make her live out of a garbage bag for more. It went on for actually an amazing amount of time to see this extremely elegant woman rooting around in a black garbage bag and while pieces of lumber lay around the house. Was very upsetting.
Well, thank God you got it finished. That would have been awful if it was one of those things that remained incomplete.
But so my book, though, ends essentially with I finally get the thing finished and shortly thereafter propose, and I almost wondered if I over was... It was as though I was taking on what you were implying, that I managed to get to this pinnacle of feeling and be able to be open enough to propose to somebody I loved and tell them that. And part of me, though, wondered if I was just beginning to, you know, next month I just joined the Promise Keepers.
Yeah.
It's a strange gang that I never quite expected to be part of, that gang of the people who'd walk around and be like, marriage is an amazing thing. But so far, about 4 months into it, I'm prepared to say that it's an amazing thing.
That's a very, very touching again. I do agree with you for the most part. I am on my second marriage, and it's important. You know what's very important is that you are in love with them deeply. Because when you do have those horrendous arguments because you didn't finish building an armoire, it's good to have love to fall back on. Because if you don't have that, the whole thing can just break apart at the center.
Yes, the architectural metaphor for you.
Okay, now I'm getting it back. So now there's an essay in the book about being a bike messenger. Now, you were a bike messenger, and I imagine you were writing at the same time, and now you find that there's some comparison to be made between being a bike messenger and being a writer, yes?
Yeah, well, I was a bike messenger a few times in my life. The first time was the only real time. I was 15. And worked for this company called Educated and Dedicated, which to this day I think is the greatest title for anything, any enterprise.
Yeah.
Educated and Dedicated. What more could you ask? Then I was a bike messenger again in my mid-20s. And then a few years ago, which is to say considerably past my mid-20s, I realized I just wasn't taking advantage of this time I had. And if I wasn't going to be working hard on writing, I should do something productive, like being a bike messenger. And which would therefore, you know, make me appreciate the time that I've had on my hands. And it was an amazing experience to be a bike messenger. I recommend it very highly. Anyone who's feeling dissatisfied with your current employment situation, take a day or two off, work as a bike messenger, realize what actual work is, in which you make no money unless you're brutally kicking your butt forward and pushing yourself forward. And if you're not going to try really hard at every given moment, you're not going to make a penny. And you're not going to make progress. And at some point it did occur to me that writing is a little bit like that, that you're either just struggling up the hill or you're not. And there's no one else who's going to get you there but your own effort. There's no help.
Now, how close to the edge of a bike messenger were you? Were you one of those guys that used to grab onto the side of buses when you got tired?
Well, there's several. It depends on which incarnation. My most recent incarnation, sorry, I just for those of you on the radio, I just smacked this gentleman right here. No.
Mark Riley got it in the face there.
Yeah.
No, I wasn't a big bus truck grabber, and on the most recent go-around, I was pretty civilized. But definitely, as a 15-year-old, I got a lot of pleasure out of torpedoing into these huge kind of Red Sea situations when people are crossing the street.
And oh, you're one of them?
There's this one spot on Madison Avenue between 41st and 42nd, where it tilts downhill really fast, and you've got this 42nd Street traffic, and if they don't see a car, they just don't accept that you're an actual physical entity.
They will if you hit them.
Yeah, well, that's the sort of game of chicken that you're playing. But I want to distinguish something, because whenever I tell people about having been a messenger, I'm invariably presented with a story of some terrible, you know, my sister got hit, and now she's had 5 surgeries on her shoulder. And often when I inquire further, and this is a maybe an impolitic distinction, but guys who are delivering dinner
are not bike messengers.
Bike messengers, and those are often the people that are smashing into people. Bike messengers have a certain code of professionalism, often to an absurd degree considering what the profession is, but they are very sort of chivalrous in a way, bike messengers, and tend not to smash into people. Often when you hear the story of the bike messenger that killed someone, it was some guy who's, you know, delivering a burrito.
Which, yeah.
Not usually what the bike messenger's delivering.
But bike messengers are like Jedi warriors. Those guys are geniuses. They can ride up buildings. It's unbelievable.
They are geniuses. Although I must say, sometimes one feels that every profession takes itself rather seriously or holds itself in high regard. I mean, I know that the radio MCs of the world feel very good about themselves, as well you should.
Wait, do you know me? I'm feeling good about myself sometimes.
Right, because, fall into that category. Bike messengers have made a cult out of, you know, the incredibleness of what they do, which is, to a point, valid, because it is a very incredible activity, and then beyond that, it's maybe...
We're talking to Thomas Veller, author of How to Be a Man, Scenes from a Protracted Boyhood. Let's just talk briefly about Mr. Beller's neighborhood. This is a website that you put together in response to 9/11, is it not?
No, actually, it's not. That's not true. I put it in response. I put it together. I was doing a magazine called Open City, and still am, with some friends. And that, it was like a band in which like the band members were having problems. And in that situation, then the idea of doing like a solo record came to mind. And I'd always loved doing little sketches, urban sketches. And one of which, as it happens, was about this place, Florent, and the fact that for years, Florent was this strange beacon of sort of tranny civilization in the meatpacking district, distinguished by this little string of Christmas lights that was on all year round.
Yeah.
And then the neighborhood started to light up, and Pastis opened up on the corner, and all these incredibly trendy, bright places opened up, and one day the Christmas lights disappeared, and it was like, what's that about? Because for years, probably over a decade, these little Christmas lights were the only thing that told you that human life existed here in the meatpacking district, other than the other signs of human life that were sort of wearing interesting clothing.
Here's the answer for you.
I found out the answer, but I mean, you want me to say the answer? You want to? What? Interestingly enough, the lights disappeared because they were plugged into an electrical socket in the building next door, and the guy who owned the building next door wanted to build a 50-story skyscraper over the meatpacking district. And Florent, the man, opposed this development plan, and out of acrimony...
Yeah.
So in the midst of all this bright lights that had sprung up and grooviness that had sprung up in this neighborhood that used to only be populated by Florent with this little string of Christmas lights, this dispute erupted, and in this classic way that... there's just no bottom to the pettiness of neighborly disputes. So the guy who wanted to build a skyscraper that was being opposed by his neighbor Florent said, "You can't use my plug." So that was the end of the Christmas lights outside of Florent. But the sort of quasi-poetic justice is they're not even needed anymore because the whole neighborhood is one big string of Christmas lights.
All right, Thomas Beller is our guest. The book is How to Be a Man, Seen from a Protracted Boyhood. He is the co-founder and editor of Open City Magazine. You can go to MrBeller'sNeighborhood.com. We'll have Florent on in just a second. Stay with us. We've got the liberal agenda, 48 past the hour, Air America Radio's Morning Sedition.
Morning Sedition, on the air and online. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
We can land in the rain. It's 53 past the hour. It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Hey.
We've been broadcasting all day live from Florent Restaurant on Gansevoort Street, New York's Meatpacking District. We're here helping Florent celebrate 20 years in the Meatpacking District. The celebration kicks off in earnest next week with various festivities, culminating in a benefit gala at the Roxy Nightclub next Saturday, October 22nd. You can go. Is it yes? You can go to Florent. It's Florent.com. Is it restaurantflorent.com? For info on the excitement. I want to thank Florent for having us here. There he is right there.
Yeah.
The man, the myth, the legend. I want to thank Marisol and Gates and Rob and Scooter and Harry and Osmani, Javier, Nico, Carmela, Richard, Eve, who made these great cookies. Florent, of course, and Denise for having us here. Riley, you know, I had a plan. Annie, our fan, who likes Rachel Maddow better than us. Actually, he was willing to trade Sweeney Todd tickets for a Tom Beller book, so I think Tom made an impact. Well, now you got both, so I don't need to send you one, so that's good. So Riley, it's what do you got? You got any big plans for the weekend?
No, I'm gonna probably just I've had big plans for the last couple of weekends. I got a big plan for next weekend. But you know, there's a lot of people descending on Washington this weekend.
Do you have the information on that?
Well, that's the Millions More movement. It's the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March that took place in '95. It's always been controversial because it's organized by Minister Louis Farrakhan of the Nation of Islam. They are not talking about how many people are going to be there. What I find very interesting is that this time, and I got this confirmed through our friend Keith Boykin, who was on the air with us before.
Oh, I remember that guy.
Yeah. Well, apparently they have invited members of a lesbian and gay organization to speak at this march and rally tomorrow, which I find very different and very good.
So Farrakhan's reaching out finally.
He is reaching out. I mean, he's the convener. He doesn't say he's in charge or whatever. But I think it's good that they are broadening and diversifying who they're speaking to.
Again, I want to keep this up because I think that we've actually got something going here with the sponsoring of a congressional candidate.
Dan Pashman, ladies and gentlemen.
I really think that. But you know, it's funny. He said to me on the break, right? He goes, "Well, what if I win? Then who's gonna do
yeah,
the
I know.
Show?
Who's gonna do the show?"
Well, I think maybe you can do both. You could be our presence on the inside, Dan. You could be a regular guest reporter.
I can tell you all the dirty little secrets. I can actually broadcast live from like you know secret meetings on the Capitol and stuff.
Yeah, you're gonna be the first guy they let into the secret meetings.
Yeah.
Hey, here's Pashman with the rap sandwiches and the Springsteen music.
I could be your Jeff Gannon.
Oh.
Are you hitting?
You got
on
a
me?
Website too?
In the political sense, of course.
I think Dan just hit on me. Did you get that feeling?
Yeah.
So where are the pictures?
Yeah, really?
All right, so what I want to say is that Democrats, there is an opportunity here. We need 15 seats in the House, and we need six seats in the Senate. Get out there. Go to wellstoneaction.org and see what you can do there. Is that the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound?
Yep.
Here are your liberal marching orders for the weekend. Write these down. One, ask James Dobson if he had a private conversation with George Bush about Harry Myers and remind him that lying is a sin. Two, now that New York has scaled back subway security, take a bearded Pakistani out for a no hard feelings dinner. Three, follow Tom DeLay around and whenever he complains about being charged with money laundering, repeat exactly what he says, but in a higher voice with a lisp. Four, before charges are filed in the Valerie Plame case, follow Carl Rove around humming the theme from Jaws. Five, write a new version of Moby Dick where the Pequod is a Greenpeace vessel whose Captain Ahab is a role model to differently abled conservationists.
Yeah, right.
Wow. Today's phrase, just drop this in the conversation. Bush says religion helps define Harriet Myers. Wake up, sheeple. She has an altar at home with a painting of Bush sitting on the Virgin Mary's lap.
Oh, God.
All right. Restaurant Florent, again, thank you all.
Yeah, thank you so much.
What do you
it's
got
great.
For us? Next week, Cindy
Next week,
Sheehan.
Cindy Sheehan's going to be live in studio. We've got Director Cameron Crowe, Vanity Fair's James Walcott, and Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Thank you all so much for being here with us at Restaurant Florent.
Have a good weekend,
Marin. Have a good weekend, Marin. This has been a great show. This is Air America Radio.